Welcome to Dream Journey, Breaking the Dream Barriers. This podcast is a transformative journey where you will learn how to bridge gaps in your life and career, unlocking the power within you to evolve into the most authentic, aligned, powerful version of yourself. The word evolve comes from the Latin volvere, which means to bring around, to make progress, and move forward. This podcast is your guide to navigating that progression. Are you stuck, struggling to find alignment between your personal and professional life? Feel like you are on the verge of something, but unsure how to take the leap? Together, we'll explore the tools, strategies, and insights to get unstuck, reinvent yourself, and step into a life and career that reflect your deepest values and desires. Through coaching, creative self-discovery practices, neuroscience, and powerful personal transformation tools, you can avoid burnout, redefine success on your own terms, and master the art of the pivot. This podcast is not just about career or life shifts. It's about empathy, embracing adversity, and evolving together as leaders in a world where the balance of the masculine and feminine is essential. We'll explore the dynamic polarity between these energies, the power of collaboration, and how to unleash your fullest potential as individuals, as communities, and as leaders. Let's begin your new chapter because it's time to align, grow, and create. Today's episode, Bridging the Giver's Gap, Love as a Language for Evolving. Love is a battlefield, and the world needs more love. To be a warrior of the heart is to step into the mastery of life's gaps, the spaces between who we are and who we are becoming, so we can evolve, not just as one person, but as a collective. At my company, Elysian Dream, we speak a language that transcends borders. Here's a hint. It's not English, Spanish, Arabic, Russian, or Chinese. The language of Elysian Dream is love. But why love? It's because love is the force that bridges the gaps within us, within relationships, and within work centers. Love can transform communities and the entire world. But love begins with you. If you want to receive love, you must give love. When I was growing up, our family dog named Sam, he was a mix of golden retriever and Afghan hound. He was a lover and a natural giver. He loved most people, except for the LP gas man and bicyclers. In return for Sam's love and giving, everyone, except the gas man and the bicyclers, loved him back. And that love became like a closed circle without an end. In Native American wisdom, there's a story of two wolves battling within the heart, one of fear, anger, and ego, the other of love, courage, and wisdom. The one that wins is the one that you choose to feed. Sometimes people can be like dogs, running on instinct. Waking up, breaking free from unconscious patterns, and bridging the gaps begins in your heart. Because the power to evolve isn't just in the battle, it's in the choice. The question is, which wolf will you feed? The heart has held deep symbolic, spiritual, and physiological significance across ancient cultures. It was often seen as a center of life, emotion, wisdom, and even the soul. First, we will explore how different civilizations understood the heart, then tap into modern neuroscience. Giving is both an act of love and an act of the heart, but the emphasis depends on the perspective you take. Giving as an act of love. Love in its highest form is selfless and unconditional. True giving stems from agape, which is the Greek concept of universal love, a love that expects nothing in return. In spiritual traditions like Christianity, Buddhism, and Sufism, giving is a manifestation of divine love, a way to express compassion and kindness. C.S. Lewis says that charity means love. It's not just giving to the poor, but love in action. In giving as an act of the heart, many ancient cultures, such as Egyptians, Hindus, and Native Americans, viewed the heart as the seat of wisdom and morality. The ancient Egyptians believed the heart was weighed against a feather in the afterlife to measure one's purity. A giving heart was a light heart. The Stoics, too, saw the heart as governed by reason and virtue. Giving was an act of justice and a way to align with the natural order. So which is it? Giving is both an act of love and the heart. Love is the intention behind the giving, and the heart is the source of the action. When we give authentically, we align the two, expressing love through the wisdom of the heart. In ancient Greece, Aristotle believed the heart was the seat of intelligence, not the brain. He thought it controlled emotions, sensation, and reasoning, while the brain merely really cooled the blood. Eros in Greek mythology and love, also known as Cupid, struck the heart with arrows to inspire deep love and passion, linking the heart to desire. The key idea here is that the heart was both rational and emotional, central to passion and intellect. In ancient China, the heart was seen as the emperor of the body. In traditional Chinese medicine, the heart is viewed as the ruler of the organs, the emperor that harmonizes the body's energy known as qi, where it houses shen known as spirit and consciousness. And this is central to clarity, wisdom, and balance. The heart wasn't just emotional. That's their key idea. It was the gateway to higher awareness and harmony. In ancient India, it's known as the spiritual center. The heart chakra, the Anahata. In Hindu and yogic traditions, it represents unconditional love, connection, and spiritual awakening. It is where the material and spiritual worlds meet. Ayurveda and the heart was seen as the center of both physical and emotional well-being, linked to the prana, which is the life force. And the key idea here is that the heart was the bridge between the physical and the divine, symbolizing compassion and unity. The Mayans and Aztecs call it the sacred heart of the cosmos. They had something to deal with the sun and human sacrifice. It sounds kind of brutal, but it was what they did in their time. The Aztecs believed that the heart was a source of life energy and offered human hearts to the sun god to maintain cosmic balance. In Mayan culture, the heart is known as a vital force. It was seen as the source of strength, courage, and a connection to the gods. The key idea here is that the heart was the direct link to cosmic forces and divine power. Giving also aligns with Socrates' teachings on moral reciprocity and Tocqueville's observations on the power of community-based giving in a democracy. A key connection of these ancient cultures is a universal power of the heart. Now that you understand the importance of the heart in ancient cultures, let's dive into the neuroscience view of the heart-brain. So there's a heart-brain connection known as a neural network in the heart. So your heart has its own nervous system, and it's known as the intrinsic cardiac nervous system. It contains around 40,000 neurons, sometimes called the heart-brain. It has bidirectional communication. So your heart sends more signals to the brain than the brain sends to the heart. It influences your emotions and stress response, decision making and intuition, and also hormone regulation. So hormones like oxytocin, adrenaline, and cortisol. And we know oxytocin is the love hormone. Cortisol is known as a stress hormone. So modern neuroscience reinforces the belief that the heart is central to wisdom and spiritual clarity. Let's break down what heart coherence is. So this is about the science of emotion and well-being. You have something known as heart rate variability. This is a variation in time between heartbeats. It is a key measure of emotional and physical health. If you have a high heart rate variability, it means that you have resilience. But if you have a low heart rate variability, you are more prone to stress and disease risk. The HeartMath Institute research shows that positive emotions such as gratitude, love, and compassion create heart coherence, syncing the heart, the brain, and the nervous system. So this is great for focus and decision-making, emotional regulation, stress resilience, and modern neuroscience also aligns with the Hindu and Buddhist belief of heart-centered meditation in compassion and gratitude. Studies suggest that the heart perceives events milliseconds before the brain, which can influence gut feelings and intuitive decisions. And modern neuroscience also aligns with the Greek belief that the heart held deep wisdom beyond logic. The heart also has an electromagnetic field influence. Your heart generates a magnetic field that is 100 times stronger than the brain, and that potentially explains why emotions are contagious in groups. And modern neuroscience aligns with the ancient connection of the Mayan and Aztec belief that the heart is a cosmic energy center connecting people and forces. Today, neuroscientists, psychologists, and heart specialists increasingly validate what ancient cultures already knew. The heart is not just a pump, it's a key player in emotions, intuition, and well-being. The power of giving is a transformational force of love. Giving is often framed as a virtue, but it's also a strategic force, one that can influence relationships, power dynamics, and personal evolution. When understood through the lens of neuroscience, behavioral psychology, and philosophical wisdom, giving is not merely an act of kindness, but a mechanism for transformation. The act of giving, whether through time, resources, energy, it activates the brain's reward system, and it leads to an increase in oxytocin, dopamine, and serotonin, the neurotransmitters linked to trust, happiness, and connection. But not all giving is equal. There exists a giver's gap. A giver's gap is a divide between giving that elevates and giving that depletes. When people give from a place of alignment rather than obligation, they experience growth rather than burnout. This is where the love language of evolving comes in, understanding how to give and receive in ways that expand rather than diminish your power. There's also neuroscience of giving and why it feels good. From a neurological perspective, giving activates the brain's reward system, specifically the ventral striatum and the prefrontal cortex, and this leads to an increase in dopamine and serotonin, the neurotransmitters linked to happiness and connection. This also aligns with something called the law of reciprocity, which states that giving creates an unconscious expectation of return, whether in social, emotional, or material form. However, genuine giving, as opposed to transactional giving, aligns with reciprocal altruism, which is a theory in evolutionary biology that explains how cooperation leads to long-term survival. Here's a case study. It's called the Pay It Forward Experiment. It was published in Nature Communications in 2018. It found that acts of kindness created a ripple effect. When people experience generosity, they are more likely to pay it forward, causing a chain reaction of giving. Here's an example. There was a cafe in Naples, Italy. It allowed customers to buy suspended coffees, extra coffees that can be redeemed later by someone who's in need. And who isn't in need of coffee, right? So this act of generosity creates a culture of giving rather than a one-time transaction. Here's something that you can try if you want to pay it forward. Here's a pay it forward challenge for you. For 1 week, engage in unexpected giving, buy coffee for a stranger, leave a kind note, or offer your skills without expecting a return. Then journal the effects. How did it feel? Did the giving come back to you in unexpected ways? There's something called John Nash's Equilibrium Theory, or NET, and it states that in any exchange, individuals achieve the best outcome when they balance personal benefit with collective well-being. Game theory offers insight into why giving must be strategic rather than self-sacrificing. So Nash's equilibrium theory states that in any system of exchange, individuals can achieve the best outcome when they make decisions that balance personal benefit with collective well-being. So this applies to giving. So if you are overgiving without reciprocity, it can lead to depletion. Or transactional giving can create a shallow relationship. But conscious giving, which is strategic and aligned, can foster mutual evolution. Here are a few examples of people who overgive versus conscious givers. Sarah is an example. She's a nonprofit volunteer, gives endlessly, working late nights, and sacrificing her health. She assumes that giving should be selfless, but over time, burnout erodes her ability to help others effectively. And then there's David, a consultant. He gives through mentorship and networking, ensuring that his contributions are reciprocal. He helps others succeed while maintaining his own well-being, creating a sustainable cycle of giving. Try this exercise to identify what your giving pattern is. Do you overgive, exhausting yourself? Or do you give strategically, balancing reciprocity? Or do you withhold giving out of fear or scarcity? Reflect on your past giving experiences. When did giving feel empowering versus draining? The foundation of Business Network International, known as BNI, is a giver's gain philosophy, which emphasizes that giving within a network creates exponential reciprocity, not by being a doormat, but by being an empowered contributor. Bridging the giver's gap is about giving with boundaries. True giving requires discernment. It is not synonymous with being a doormat. So here's how to bridge the gap. Know your love language of giving, whether it's through words, service, quality time, touch, or gifts. Identify how you give best. Reciprocity, not obligation. Give where reciprocity, not just material, but emotional or energetic, is possible. Here's something called the yes test. Ask, does this giving expand me or exhaust me? You have to find power over people pleasing. And I have a lot of clients who are people pleasers. True giving comes from overflow, not depletion. Before giving, ask, does it expand me or exhaust me? Is there a natural cycle of reciprocity, or is this a one-way drain? Am I giving out of obligation, or is this aligned with my values? Here's a formula that you can try for giving. The most powerful form of giving is one that aligns with personal growth, spiritual expansion, and strategic wisdom. Giving should create, not consume. It should build, not break. By embracing the neuroscience, philosophy, and strategy behind giving, we are transforming the world. Try this for a month. Week 1, awareness. Track how, when, and why you give. Make week 2 about experimentation. Shift your giving styles. Try different forms of generosity. Week 3, make sure that you have boundaries. Set limits on where and how you give. And week 4, make that about integration. Create a given philosophy that aligns with your values and energy. Setting boundaries is crucial because there are people who will take until you have nothing left to give. Now we will explore the neuroscience of a taker. The neuroscience of takers versus givers is rooted in brain activity, is related to reward processing, empathy, social cognition, and stress regulation. Research in psychology and neuroscience provides insights into how the brains of takers, self-focused individuals, and givers, who are other-focused individuals, functions differently. So there's a reward system with dopamine and motivation. So takers, the self-centered individuals, often show heightened activity in the ventral striatum. This is a key area of the brain's reward system. They tend to seek personal rewards, things like status, money, and power, over social rewards, and their dopamine release is more associated with personal gain than altruistic behavior. So givers, who are pro-social individuals, activate the dopaminergic reward circuits when giving to others. And this suggests that generosity itself is a source of intrinsic pleasure. So this is linked to the helper's high from altruistic actions. And then there's empathy and the mirror neuron system. So givers exhibit stronger activation in the anterior cingulate cortex and the anterior insula. Both are involved in empathy and emotional mirroring. And this means that they can better feel and understand others' emotions, leading to increased pro-social behavior. Takers show less engagement in these areas, suggesting lower emotional resonance with others' feelings. Some studies indicate that extreme takers, people who may be on the narcissistic spectrum, have structural differences in the anterior insula, leading to reduced empathy. But takers tend to use this area of their brain more for self-referential thinking, focusing on how situations benefit them rather than considering others' needs. Stress and cortisol regulation. Givers show lower cortisol levels and better regulation of the amygdala, the brain's fear center, during social interactions. Altruism has been linked to lower stress and increased resilience. Takers, especially those who exploit others, may experience higher baseline cortisol due to constant status seeking and social competition. Oxytocin is the bonding hormone, and it plays a major role in social trust and cooperation. Givers show higher oxytocin levels when helping others, strengthening their tendency to form deep social bonds. But takers may have lower oxytocin responses, making them less inclined to trust or reciprocate generosity. Takers are wired for self-reward, lower empathy, and higher stress in competitive situations, while givers are wired for social reward, higher empathy, and lower stress in cooperative interactions. This difference explains why givers thrive in long-term relationships and social networks, while takers may succeed in the short term, but often struggle with trust and collaboration over time. Shifting from a taker to a giver involves rewiring your brain for greater empathy, social connection, and intrinsic fulfillment. This change is possible through neuroplasticity, your brain's ability to form new neural pathways based on repeated experiences and behaviors. Here's how you can make the shift. Number one, train your brain for empathy. You're going to strengthen the mirror neuron system. In neuroscience, the mirror neurons in the anterior cingulate cortex and the anterior insula help you feel what other people feel. Strengthening these areas increases empathy. You can practice active listening, focus 100% on the speaker without thinking about your response. Engage in perspective taking. Ask yourself, how would I feel in this situation? You could try reading fiction or watching emotional films. This activates the default mode network and improves social cognition and empathy. You can also volunteer or engage in acts of service, where your brain learns empathy through repeated pro-social actions. Number two, rewiring your reward system for giving. So this is activating dopamine and oxytocin. In neuroscience, takers get a dopamine hit from self-gain, but givers experience the helper's high, which releases dopamine and oxytocin, reinforcing generosity. You can start small, do one small act of kindness daily, things like holding the door for someone, giving someone a compliment, checking in on a friend. Track the emotional impact. Write down how giving makes you feel. Your brain will start associating kindness with pleasure. Make generosity a habit. Schedule giving moments into your routine, like donating, mentoring, or supporting someone emotionally. Habits are also a component in identity. Here's a brain fact. Studies show that when you give to others, the ventral striatum, your brain's reward center, lights up as much as when you receive money. Reduce self-focus and increase social awareness. So in neuroscience, the medial prefrontal cortex can help you understand others' thoughts and emotions. Self-centered thinking weakens this region, while social reflection increases it. You can ask more questions, get genuinely curious about other people's lives and their struggles. Shift from I to we thinking. When making decisions, ask, how does this affect the people around me? Practice gratitude, recognizing how others contribute to your life and make you inclined. Recognizing how others contribute to your life makes you more inclined to give back. Here's another brain fact. Mindfulness meditation, particularly loving kindness meditation, it helps the brain and enhances compassion. Lower social stress and building trust can help regulate cortisol and boost the oxytocin. In neuroscience, takers often experience higher cortisol levels, which leads to social stress and defensiveness. Givers, by contrast, have higher oxytocin, making them feel safe in relationships. You can breathe deeply before responding in conversations. This calms the amygdala and lowers the stress response. Express appreciation more often, saying thank you or recognizing others' efforts, both yours and their oxytocin. Saying thank you or recognizing others' efforts boosts both your and their oxytocin. Spend time in cooperative environments. Join groups or teams where mutual support is the norm. Here's a brain fact. Physical touch, things like hugs, handshakes, even warm eye contact, increases oxytocin, and it reinforces trust and generosity, shifting your mindset from scarcity to abundance. In neuroscience, takers often operate from a scarcity mindset, fearing that giving will leave them with less. Givers understand that generosity often leads to long-term success and social capital. Here's a few action steps. Reframe giving as a long-term investment. Studies show that givers build stronger professional and personal networks, which pay off over time. Remember the reciprocity principle. People are naturally inclined to return generosity, creating a cycle of giving. Celebrate other people's success. Instead of feeling competitive, train your brain to feel joy for other people's achievements. Another brain fact is that the more you focus on collaboration over competition, the more your brain creates pro-social neural pathways, making giving feel natural. Here are a few final thoughts. Giving isn't just something you do. It is who you become. It shapes your character, rewires your brain, and transforms the way you move through the world. You have a choice. The question is, will you hoard like Scrooge, shrinking into scarcity, or will you expand into generosity, creating abundance for yourself and others? Rewiring from taker to giver isn't just about action. It's about identity. Your habits define you. The more you practice generosity, the more your brain integrates it into your self-concept. Try to give daily. Track the ripple effects. Watch how generosity reshapes not just your life, but the lives around you. Zig Ziglar said, "You can have everything in life you want if you will just help enough other people get what they want. If you want to dive deeper, visit my website, elysiandream.net. Check out our latest blog post, or you can explore my book for a heart math meditation to align your mind and heart in the practice of giving. I hope you will leave this episode with a new understanding of the giver's gap and the power to bridge it, because when you evolve into a giver, you evolve into your highest self. Until next time, mind the gaps.